Welcome, everyone. I'm thrilled and honored to interview my dear friend and colleague, Dave Asprey, and we're going to be taking a journey in his own journey on how he really recovered from mycotoxin and mold illness. So welcome, Dave. I'm really excited to interview you today.
Christine, I'm happy to be here for you.
Thank you. Thank you. So this is something that you really are not only passionate about, but I am so grateful that you've spent a lot of your career educating people about the dangers of mold and mycotoxins. You created a documentary, you know, your Bulletproof Coffee really, you know, popularized the idea of that we could be ingesting mycotoxins and how to navigate that. And so the people who are listening to this summit are not only potential people who this is a new topic or patients who are still in the throes of their journey and recovering from mold illness, and then physicians always, you know, we're always looking for new tools and how to treat patients and get better and better at our at recovering more quickly when patients come to see us. And so I would love us, if you don't mind, just to take a moment and how did your journey into biohacking really start with uncovering that mold and mycotoxins were really making you sick?
I grew up in a basement that had been flooded, and we didn't know anything about mold back in the 70s and 80s. And all I knew is I had tons of symptoms and no one could figure it out. I went to allergist after allergist, and I had strep throat over and over, and asthma and allergies and behavioral disorders. All the stuff that we know now is tied with it. I had these nosebleeds 10 times a day. It was just a chronic thing. And easy bruising, which is another very common sign of environmental toxic mold exposure. And eventually the allergist said, "We think you're allergic to cockroaches and Kapok," which is a filling for life vests in the 70s. "And everything else is fine." So it just didn't make any sense. And we moved, but I was always somehow around mold. And I'd get sometimes a little better, sometimes a little bit worse, but chronic pain and inflammation is just how things were. Mold also makes you angry. It makes it harder to control your emotions, so you tend to get mold rage. So not a really good setup. And I finally said, I'm going to get on top of this. I'm just in pain all the time. I'm in my mid-20s, and I'm noticing the chronic fatigue syndrome. I've been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, and all the risks, all the diseases that bring on risk as you age, I already have them. I'm not even 30. Arthritis, high risk of stroke and heart attack, prediabetes, you know, the list just goes on and on. And I went to my normal doctor and he basically said, maybe you should try to lose some weight. I'm like, I worked out an hour and a half a day, 6 days a week for a year and a half, and I didn't lose any weight. And I was on a low fat, low calorie diet. He looks at me like, yeah, liar. You know, you're eating Snickers bars all the time. Okay. Then I said, vitamin C makes me feel better. And he said, stop, it'll kill you. And I said, what about Linus Pauling? And so Linus Pauling won 2 Nobel Prizes, took 90 grams of vitamin C a day. And the doctor looks at me and goes, Linus who? And I said, you're fired. And I walked out of his office. I didn't pay him. And it was on my credit report for 7 years, but it was worth it. And for 4 years, I studied everything. And I said, I have one of these 7 things going on, including I had yeast, but not toxic mold on my list of things. And I went into a functional medicine doctor before we really used that name. It was someone called an orthomolecular doctor, but an anti-aging doctor. And he said, I was a Johns Hopkins ENT surgeon. My patients didn't get better. So I learned all the weird stuff. I do some homeopathy. I do a lot of nutritional interventions. I do intravenous vitamin C and other things. My patients get better. No one sees me more than 3 times. Dave, you've been here 10 times. I think I want to order an HIV test for you. I don't think you have HIV, but you're not getting better the way everyone else does. And it's driving me nuts because, you know, I am a master of my craft. And it turns out this is the guy who actually was the first person to make liposomal glutathione commercially. So this is someone who really knew what he was doing. His name was Tim Guilford. And one thing led to another. And finally he said, well, you don't have HIV, but I'm going to test you for allergies to mold. And what do you know? It came back and it said, you're allergic to 8 of the top 10 most toxic species. So I'm like, aha, now I have proof of exposure and proof that my immune system is reacting this way, right? And it's such a common problem in homes, especially in Northern California, where I was at the time, that was the smoking gun that led me to really start to understand mold. And now I filmed a documentary on it and I've written a lot about it and helped to raise awareness of how important it is.
And that story is unfortunately all too common, that a lot of my patients have gone through it as well. And I think, again, we're doing a lot of education, but I'd love to hear your story about how, you know, we look at, when we talk about mold and mycotoxins and how they affect us physically. You mentioned this allergic phenomenon, so looking at allergy to mold. So that's one way to look at immune reactivity. But there's also other ways to understand how mold is affecting us physically and creating this cascade of inflammation and all of these symptoms. And so I would love for you to let us know, did you have any other tests once you saw that this your body was having this allergic reaction? Were there other tests that gave you more and more of a deeper understanding of that this was, in fact, a lot of your symptoms were due to mold?
Well, it's mystifying because mold can have different symptoms for different people, mm-hmm. right? So, and one day it's this, the other day it's that. If you're living in a moldy house, though, you're always exposed to it. And the biggest thing there is you go on vacation, everything's better. Mm-hmm. You come home, it gets worse. Mm-hmm. So that is probably the single biggest thing someone who's not sure can do that's relatively free. Mm-hmm. You can also get something called an ERMI test, an environmental relative mold index test. And what this will do is this will measure the mold inside your house versus the mold outside your house and tell you, in my case, one of the times when I had a relapse of symptoms from a leaky dishwasher, we had it replaced. There was water that had been leaking for a long time, released a bunch of mold, and my dogs stopped eating. And you know, my brain just instantly foggy, my gut lining shed, but I didn't know what was going on. I just felt like a zombie, like I was hungover all the time. And when you get mold, especially something like that, everything feels like it's just too much work. It's like walking through mud all the time and just doing basic stuff, making a decision to go to another place. It's like, oh, it's just too much. I'll just lay here. So it kind of turns you into a bump on a log. When you get out of an environment like that, it's a big deal. The other thing that works though, so at that time, 88 times more penicillium indoors than outdoors. So we knew we had that, plus a bunch of other probably worse ones. But that was the dominant one. I've also had Stachybotrys in another house where I live, which really causes long-term neurological harm until you recover. Anyone who tells you that anything going on with you is permanent or irreversible is just an idiot. Just to be really clear. I am younger now at 48 than I was at 28. Like in every way that matters, and metabolically and cognitively and mentally, it's entirely possible. What they mean is, given what I've been taught, I don't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing. So impossible or permanent medically, no way. Your body can do all sorts of stuff that you wouldn't even imagine. So in my case, I would say one of the other big tests is you can take activated charcoal and maybe a pharmaceutical called cholestyramine. And if you take that and you feel much better in a day or two, you're probably binding up some toxins, right? But ideally, you could get a test that says what's going on. And there's a variety of lab tests you can get. But again, it's increasing money. So get an air test. There's $400. Get a lab test. There's $500. And you got to pay a doctor to go see all this stuff. A really good doctor like you still have to make a living, right? So all of a sudden you're saying, I feel like crap all the time. It's probably affecting my income. It's affecting my career. It's affecting my family. Oh, and I'm going to go spend a couple $1,000 to know what's going on. Yeah. And is your insurance company going to pay for it? Probably not. I spent $300,000 getting better. I'm lucky I was in a position to do that. It would have cost me $50,000 had I known most of what I know now. And it would cost me $5,000 had I known exactly what to do with what you can do today. Literally, if you get a lab test that says you have mold toxins in your body and you're having a response to them, then you bind the toxins and you go through the treatment protocols that we now understand, it is within reason to get better quickly. And I've helped, I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of people go through that just with the knowledge and some conversations here and there. So it's not meant to be a lifelong problem. It might take you a year to get all the way better, but it should take you a couple months to start feeling way better than you have in a long time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, great info. And I'm going to pick your brain because probably many people who are listening have maybe spent $300,000 or more, unfortunately, on trying to get to the root of their illness. And so $5,000 sounds like a great plan, for, some people to get better. And so you mentioned, again, we reiterate this a lot in the summit, right? If you have a known mold exposure and you're sick, you have to get out of the mold. Obviously you, I think, agree to that. And then once you're out of the mold, how do you really get the mold out of your system and undo the inflammatory cascade that it creates in the body? So you mentioned binders like charcoal and cholestyramine. You kind of already alluded to liposomal glutathione, but what are some of your other, like when you think about your recovery, what were some of the most meaningful things that you did?
One of the things that made the biggest difference for me was ozone therapy. What mold does, if you think about it, your body is a collection of cells, and there's a lot of them in there. And inside the cells, there's ancient bacteria called mitochondria. And there's way more of them than there are cells in your body. And we call them the power plants of your cells, but they're actually environmental sensors that also make hormones and make electricity, right? And they make other proteins and signaling molecules. So they're basically factories looking at the world around you going, should I make energy? Should I make something else? Should I make an inflammatory compound? What do I do? And when enough of them make enough decisions, the emergent behavior is that you're more you, right? So do I feel stressed or not feel stressed? Am I energized? Am I not energized? Mm-hmm. And the ancient enemy of bacteria is mold. If you don't believe me, what is penicillin? It is a mold toxin purified. So for 2 billion years, molds and bacteria have been at war. And your body is feeling attacked and your mitochondria are damaged by mold toxins. What ozone therapy does is ozone therapy gives a signal to the mitochondria that says you better wake up. It actually donates electrons to them so they can start doing more. And it also tells them you need to turn on your antioxidant defenses even if they've been disabled by the mold. And suddenly your mitochondria become stronger. And I remember very well the first time I learned to do ozone therapy about 20 years ago, I learned from an 88-year-old dentist who had been using it in his medical practice for a long time. He took me in after hours and said, here's all the gear works. You can buy your own. And you can do it at home rectally or vaginally. And when you go to an office, you do it intravenously, usually. But any of them is good. And IV is sort of the gold standard. What I did is I went home, I bought the machine, and I used it. And I felt like myself for 5 minutes that first day. I'm like, wow, that was great. And the next day I did it and I felt like myself for 8 minutes and it just kept going up. And I did it every night for about 18 months and it restored my biology and I was binding toxins. And I went on a course of antifungal therapy and I got rid of all the mold in my environment and I stopped eating omega-6 fats and I went on the bulletproof diet, even though it didn't have a name then, where you eat a lot of saturated fats. And I didn't at the time know about intermittent fasting, but if I'd known, I would have done that as well. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of how I did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are all great tools. And a lot of the therapies myself and Dr. Gordon and Nafisa both use as well. We have ozone in the office. We just got actually a 10 pass. I've been using UVBI and major autoheme for a while. But ozone is one of those really wonderful treatments that does so much for the body. Incorporating that in your recovery, binders, glutathione, antifungal sometimes get missed, I feel like. So sometimes I feel like people don't really understand how mold can colonize in the body and the sinuses and the GI tract. Also, it's immunosuppressive as well. And so then you can have yeast overgrowth or dysbiosis in other ways or other other infections can thrive when you have immunosuppression. And so, no, I think those are all great pearls. And Dave, one of the things that I see a lot in the mold community and the mold illness community is this sensitivity that develops. And so it's a lot of different reasons why this develops, but mold sensitive patients also tend to be like chemically sensitive. They tend to be the canaries in the coal mine. They can walk into a building and, smell either the fragrance or the mold right away. And it can be really, really harmful to their body. It can be highly neurotoxic and take them down. And so I know that you do a lot of work educating people on neurofeedback and neuroplasticity. And so did that have also a component in your healing, looking at how you have to rewire your brain to the threat that has been so harmful to it in the past?
Yeah. Here's the thing. Your body is not equipped to recognize these mold toxins. They're very small molecular weight. Mm. And in fact, some of the more common ones look a lot like cholesterol. And your body likes cholesterol. So what happens is that your immune system's looking around for something, going, I know something's messing with me, but I can't see it. So I'm going to find something that's probably it, and I'm going to latch onto that. And I'm going to tell myself that that's what's causing it so I can have something to react to. So most people who have chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, or Lyme disease, in my experience, which is pretty deep, they have mold exposure. Maybe 10% of people who think they have Lyme have Lyme. Everyone who has chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, funny, you get rid of mold in the environment, put them on anti-mold therapy, they don't have chronic fatigue syndrome anymore. It's like, who would have thought? So this is something that I would like to see more out there. But part of this too is that you become, well, let's put it this way. It's not even you. It's your immune system has its own consciousness and intelligence that is teachable. And there's a whole field called psychoneuroimmunology that proves what I'm saying is real. Like it's an actual field of science. So there's no, you know, airy-fairy stuff in there. And that system says, okay, there's a threat and I'm going to trigger an appropriate threat response. Unfortunately, it's mismatched. What you can do with breathing exercises, somatic therapy, and 40 years of Zen is my neurofeedback company where I've done most of my own work and I bring senior executives through. And there's a reset process you go through where you are reactive, whether you're reactive because I smelled something that I didn't want to smell, perfume or some kind of chemical sensitivity, or my boss yelled at me. There's people who, the boss yells at you, heart rate goes up and you get all, it's the same process. And so what you do is you just teach the body, teach the nervous system, and all of this is unconscious. It's not you deciding to do any of this. You teach it, hey, there's no need to react to that. It's not protecting you anymore. In the meantime, though, until you realize mold's a problem, until you remove it from your environment, it actually is serving you. It's telling you, I don't know what it is, but there's probably something that's going to kill you in here. Get out. Right? And that's actually really good. It's the same thing. You touch a hot stove. You don't have to think, oh, is it hot? Maybe I should move my hand. No, your hand moves and then you take credit for it. It's the same system. It's trying to help you. So you end up forgiving the inflammatory response. You end up forgiving the mold. You end up letting this go. But forgiving isn't like a cognitive, oh, I forgive you. You know, let's sing kumbaya. It's a neurological thing you do to tell the body, don't hold that as a threat because I'm not going to do that to you anymore.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And I often, a lot of my patients say, oh, my genetics are bad, or I'm not a good detoxer, and I'm so sensitive. I'm like, honestly, I think your body is actually, you know, doing the right thing. It's sending the alarm signal when you're around something that's highly neurotoxic that we really haven't been equipped to deal with. And so, you know, I think that, you know, my patients are, you know, again, I mentioned the canaries in the coal mine who they're having appropriate responses in a really toxic world, you know? So, I think that's a great point. And, you know, when I think about sensitivity, you know, with mold patients as well, I think about the relationship with mold and mast cells. And so again, mast cells have become more mainstream, this kind of mast cell connection with the sensitivity. And I always think, okay, what's the underlying cause that's making these mast cells so hypervigilant and hyperexcitable to readily release histamine? And so mold in our community is a big driver to that. And so what has your experience been with looking at the connection with mold, mycotoxins, mast cells in your healing process?
I think most people who are exposed to mold and working on recovering do better on a mast cell protocol that desensitizes their mast cells. So you can look at these things called toll-like receptors TLRs, and they're the things that control whether mast cells get turned on or get turned off. I'm getting distracted because there's two giant buzzards, like 6-foot wingspan, 6 feet from my window. All right, they flew away. Something died.
They have a message for you.
Yeah, hopefully they just killed some mold. That's what I'm going to say. Wow, that was pretty impressive. You don't see that often. Nice. All right. So these toll-like receptors, they trigger mast cells. So they're looking for, they're sort of the little firewall thing. They're looking for looking for something they can alert on. Oh, look, that looks like a threat. And if so, turn on mast cells. And people think, oh, mast cells, they release histamine when they degranulate, you know, inflammatory response and all that. But they make a whole bunch of bad inflammatory compounds. Mm-hmm. So if you can say, I'm going to turn down the sensitivity of the mast cells, so the toll-like receptors might get triggered, but the mast cells just don't activate as much, you'll have a lot less symptoms. So it's amazing. Really heavy-duty drugs like Claritin, Pepcid, oftentimes help with mold sensitivity, which is pretty cool, right? And, you know, especially with Pepcid, you're going to have a wrecked gut if you have mold, and Pepcid makes your gut worse unless you take the right digestive supplements when you eat, in which case you can actually take Pepcid relatively safely. And there's natural compounds like low-dose vitamin C, like quercetin, that work reasonably well. And a lot of people who heal from mold do it without controlling their mast cells. But I think that there's something to be said for that as an addition to more modern protocols, just so you can feel good. A lot of people also historically said, oh, you're going to feel like crap. You're going to have a Herxheimer reaction, and that's just how it is. And no, most people who have mold also have families or want to have families or have jobs and have lives. It's entirely possible to be exposed to mold and be highly functional while you're healing. Mm-hmm. It might take work, and it's okay if you have some days that aren't good, but I guarantee you that with things like glutathione, with binders, things like ozone, things like, I don't know, this weird thing, like this guy puts butter in his coffee. and bulletproof coffee. There are lots of things you can use that are performance enhancers, including things like modafinil, which is a narcolepsy drug, which can work wonderfully. Look, you have a right to feel good while you recover, right? You don't have to suffer. You probably will some, but you can suffer way less than you think. And if your doctor won't help you feel functional while you're recovering, it's okay to say, no, I am asking you to help me on this. And you know, if you try some prescriptions, some non-prescription stuff and nothing works, look, you may just need a lot of rest. But quite often it can come down to not eating the wrong stuff and eating the right stuff. And one of the things that happens, people get sensitized through their skin, through their tear ducts, through their sinuses. They oftentimes will be more sensitive in food as well. I think this is a much bigger problem than people realize. One of the reasons I made the Bulletproof Coffee, and I'm not trying to sell it at all here. Bulletproof's a big company. I don't even run Bulletproof anymore. I'm just the founder. And I was the first person to bring mold-free coffee to the market because I realized when I drank coffee, it made me about an hour later anxious and jittery and cranky, and it would give me food cravings. So I quit coffee for 5 years that I didn't like. I went and I traveled around. I came back to the US and I had a cup of coffee and I felt fine. I'm like, I'm fixed. I'm not allergic to coffee. And the next day I had another cup of coffee from a different company and I had all the symptoms again. I'm like, wait, I didn't get a coffee allergy overnight. It was different coffee. And I did all the research. It turns out that in most of the world, there are legal limits for the amount of mold allowed in coffee. In fact, there are for many foods. In the US and Canada, there are no standards at all. So when coffee is illegal to sell in China, yes, there are mold standards in China we don't have in the US, or in Japan, or in Europe, or in most of South America, they take all that coffee and they send it to coffee companies here. And then we drink it and then we get cranky. So for me, that coffee was just like disabling. I don't feel good to this day. I don't feel great if I drink coffee, most coffee. And so I developed lab testing standards and coffee production standards that minimized mold fermentation during the green coffee process. And these toxins unfortunately survive roasting and brewing. So, and I didn't make that up, 34 studies back up what I just said. And if that's one thing, what about peanut butter? Peanut butter is a known source of mold. In fact, it's a common source of aflatoxin. Some people are reacting to mold that's in coffee or mold that's in their food. And when you look at something like the Bulletproof Diet Roadmap, which is the thing that I made that goes along with my diet recommendations, guys, eating foods that are high risk of mold, like Brazil nuts, it's probably not good for anyone. In fact, I could show you studies for that. But for people who've been exposed in their homes, it can be like disabling or profoundly make you worse. So then you realize, wait, you mean there's a difference between this meal and that meal, even though they both say the same thing? Another example here, Christine, a lot of people don't know about this even in the mold community, but they know a lot about it in Russia. There's something called Alternaria brassica. Mm. Now, this is a mold that grows on cabbage and broccoli and related things whenever they're wet and cool. So Russia, wet and cool, they know more about it. If you get a lot of organic California cauliflower and broccoli in midwinter and you eat it, and the next morning, even that night, you're just like, my gut's off and my joints hurt and I'm kind of seeing colors a little bit. Alternaria is because it alters your perception, right? It's especially where I live in the Pacific Northwest, winter veggies are a problem. That's why we used to make sauerkraut all winter. You couldn't grow them in the winter. Right, so we do have mold in our food way more than we know about, and it's more of a trigger for people who've been exposed in their environments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that still gets under recognized and overlooked when we're putting together mold protocols. We do see these patients have like the high degree of sensitivity and a lot of food reactions, but you know, looking at it from this layer, and even you know, some of the mycotoxin testing that we can do through the urine and looking at exposure and how people you know, their mycotoxin burden. Some of it has gotten poo-pooed because of not being able to differentiate, you know, foods versus environment. But hey, it's all you know, they're all routes of exposure to mycotoxins. So we have to look at environment and, you know, foods more often. Did you do urine mycotoxin testing in your journey, or was that available at the time?
I've done urine for sure, and you can look at blood. I'm a fan of My Myco Lab. I like their approach because they're looking at an immune response to toxins as well as to the mold itself. So you can have someone who's not being currently exposed but has an onboard infection and things like that. So there's a toxicology angle to it that's different than biology. And then there's the Great Plains, the urinary things. The question about urinary is it'll measure whether you're excreting it, but are you excreting it from stores in the body or from environmental exposure? But I find that if you were to pair any of the biological screens with what's in your environment and you have a correlation, you know there's an issue.
I agree. Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, I think also, you know, when we think about mold and how it affects the body, especially if people have been in a highly toxic environment, how it can colonize the sinuses. I see a lot of, you know, chronic sinusitis and chronic sinus issues. And so not only, you know, getting out of the mold, you know, step one, but also making sure that the sinuses are irrigated as well. What were some of your sinus hacks? Did you have anything?
Yeah. I had Marcon's, the multiple antibiotic resistant coagulase negative bacteria. And if you think about it, it makes sense. So the bacteria in your body are like, we're getting attacked by this mold, which is an antibiotic in the environment. So we're going to make a biofilm to protect ourselves, which then secretes bacterial toxins right next to the brain. So what works really well for that is colloidal silver and sometimes antibiotic. There's nothing wrong with antibiotics in a nasal spray. And then sometimes EDTA to break it down. I've also used amphotericin B nasal spray and nystatin nasal spray. These are antifungal drugs if there's actual fungus up there. But one of the most, actually two of the most powerful things are, first, I call it the bulletproof sinus rinse, and you can Google that, just daveasprey.com, it's on my page. What you do is you take warm water with sea salt and a few drops of iodine in it, which is really important. And instead of doing like the neti pot, which doesn't work as well, you bend forward at the waist like a dippy bird. So your nose is pointed at the floor and then you sniff through the nose. And you won't choke on it. You're just drinking it through your nose like a straw. It'll come up in the back of your mouth without making you gag. And it'll fill your mouth with it. And it's that suction and the flow that really works. And then you basically pull your head out of the bowl and spit it in the sink. And you do that a few times, that works incredibly well. And then you follow it up with whatever medication you have. That's one. The other one is with the right ozone equipment, it's very important you don't breathe ozone gas. It's terrible for you. But if you really want to fix your sinuses, there's nothing like ozone gas in the sinuses. So what you do is you hold your breath and you usually work with a doctor. You take a syringe and you squirt low strength ozone gas in one nostril. And it'll percolate all up inside your sinuses. You feel it get all warm and all this. And then you breathe out through the nose. And then you breathe in clean air through the mouth. So that way you never inhale the ozone. But you've now used ozone gas to get way deep in the sinuses where you can really not get liquid. And that is a wonderful way to make yourself feel better. It's ridiculous. Just don't breathe ozone gas. It is not okay to breathe it. You can put it in any other hole, but not the lungs.
Thank you for that public service announcement. It's important. Yeah, no, it is important. And we use sinus, you know, nasal ozone as well. And yeah, that's something we just try to hit home because, again, you'll know very quickly that it's not good for your lungs if you ever inhale it. So,
yeah.
But no, I haven't tried the iodine rinse. You know, we use different salt solutions or xylitol, even our different probiotic washes. But, you know, iodine, that we do the nebulizer a lot with iodine for different things. But no, I'll have to try that. I'll have to share that recipe and I'll let you know how that goes.
It works. And you can also, you can do hydrogen peroxide. You can nebulize that. And that appears to be really good for your lungs as well. The other thing I would say, if people are dealing with strep throat, there are now probiotics that are positive strep that eat bad strep. They're healthy forms of strep throat that actually live in the mouth. And what we're learning is that everything happening in your gut is a reflection of what's happening in your mouth. So if you have gingivitis, you're going to have gut problems. And strangely enough, people with toxic mold very commonly, whether it's an infection or more likely in their environment, they commonly have bleeding gums and gingivitis. It's a sign of systemic inflammation. And you can look for that. What did I do that caused me to get swollen and bleeding gums? And when your oral health is better, your gut health is better. And when you have bad mold, you get sinus problems with bacteria, you get oral problems with bacteria, you get gut problems that don't work, and it's a systemic problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a great point. And we see a lot of patients too who might have what we would call like a tonsil interference field, or even have tonsil scars that, you know, history of strep in their life, and that tissue becomes inflamed or infected, and that can be a huge obstacle to lymphatic drainage, or also it's top of the gall or the gut associated lymphatic tissue. So it's like the gut brain kind of connection there. So just keeping that tissue really healthy, or in flowing is really important. Do you have a strep probiotic strain that you like, a product that you like, or
anything? Yeah, Bliss, BLIS probiotics. They're, I think it's called MK, it's either MK12 or MK8. They have actually two different ones. One's for gingivitis and one is for strep. And the guy who did it studied strep throat for 30 years because he had really bad strep throat and found, there's a healthy strep throat that fights the bad streptococcus. And if you dig deep, we also have something called Clostridium difficile, which isn't a problem for most mold people unless they're near death anyway, but it's a common hospital GI thing. Well, there's a healthy strain of probiotic Clostridium that'll push out the toxic stuff. So you find that you can manage these things, but starting in the mouth is a good idea. So if you have chronic strep throat or chronic sinusitis, you probably have mold as a trigger for that. And I would say look at using a probiotic orally and then do all the mold stuff to get rid of the mold. And magically, you shouldn't have to live through 15 years of antibiotic therapy like I did.
I know, right? It's like the chicken or the egg when you're in this journey. You know, it's like you either are misdiagnosed and then also all the immune suppression. So you have all this bacterial overgrowth and dysbiosis. But, you know, it always comes back, you know, as we learn more and more about the microbiome, it's like, let the bugs hash it out, right? Get the, you know, the right bugs and the right conditions to really allow our microbiome to thrive, because it has so much to do with our regulation of our immune system, right? So, I like that idea. And that's really, you know, aligned with naturopathic philosophy and biological medicine, you know, looking at the microbiomes in the body. I'm learning some tips. So thank you. I'm going to be filling my test kit with some new products after today to check them out. So Dave, you touched on the sinuses, and then you, you know, related that obviously the proximity to the brain, and there's many mechanisms that mold can inflame the brain. But when we think about the sinuses and the proximity to the hypothalamus and the pituitary, in your journey, did this affect sleep, hormones? How did all this go hand in hand for you?
Everyone with toxic mold is going to have sleep problems. Universally, you're going to wake up and feel like you didn't sleep. A very common sign of a new exposure, so you move into a new house or there's a water leak in your house, is vivid, strange nightmares. I remember when I moved into a condo many years ago, the person I was living with, she started having vivid nightmares, including one to the point where she got up in the middle of the night, accused me of doing random things that I could not have possibly done, like flipping lights on and off and screaming. And all, I don't even know. It didn't make any sense. And I'm just sitting there sort of going, what just happened? And she stormed out of the house with her car keys. And I'm like, what just happened? And she came in 2 hours later and said, what happened? I woke up in the car. It was a waking nightmare thing. I didn't know it because her eyes were open. She was talking, but she was asleep the whole time. And that's what mold does. And it turns out the wall in our bedroom had stachybotrys, right? And so that's an extreme example. But, you know, people twitching, kicking, restless leg syndrome, weird dreams, it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. So sleep is a major thing. And then hormone disruption, they make xenoestrogens, these molds. Not all species do. Depends what you have. But my very favorite one of the hormone disruptors is called zearalenone. Mm-hmm. And the reason it's my favorite is it's the thing that proves that calories in, calories out doesn't work. Because industrial drug companies collect zearalenone, which is 1,000 times more estrogenic than human estrogen. Then they make pellets of it and they put the pellets in cows' ears industrially. And as the mycotoxin melts into the tympanic membrane, it enters circulation, becomes a part of the cow's fat. And then the cow gets fat on 30% less calories.
Wow. I didn't know that.
If a drug can make you fat on 30% less calories, calories in, calories out is fundamentally disproven. We broke that. It doesn't exist. Okay. Wow. And this is why if you're like I was and you're in mold and you can't lose weight no matter what you do, it's because it's not about the calories. And the less you eat, the worse you're going to feel because you're already stressed. And now you're stressed because you're not getting enough energy. Your body's not going to let go of the fat because of the hormone signal from the mold. Mm-hmm. So zearalenone causes you to put on fat like no one's business, and it puts it throughout your body, fat around the organs, fat in the liver. So yeah, you got to watch out for the hormone problems. With guys, erectile dysfunction, hair loss. With women, monthly cycle problems, infertility, and problems with sperm motility. All of these are tied. And there are also direct studies to rates of calcification, to cardiovascular disease, to diabetes, and to cancer, all tied to environmental molds. Mm-hmm. And a shout out to a guy who's no longer with us, a WHO researcher who spent 17 years putting together the research and the story behind this. His name was A.V. Constantini. When I first had mold, his books were only available in Germany and had just been translated to English. So I spent $500 to get copies sent from Germany to my house. And I still have those copies. And he called them fungal bionics and wrote, you know, paper after, not paper after paper, but compendiums of papers linking all these things together. And A.V. Constantini is one of the, obviously called the preeminent modern scholar who realized that these are linked both nutritionally and environmentally to huge numbers of degenerative diseases. Now in more recent history, I interviewed Dale Bredesen, who wrote a book, The End of Alzheimer's, on my podcast on Bulletproof Radio. And I'm like, I feel so vindicated. In his book, he's like, there's four major causes of Alzheimer's, and toxic mold's one of them. I'm like, hallelujah, brother. Someone finally said it. Yeah, it's a trigger there as well. So most of the degenerative causes of aging are linked to mold. It doesn't mean it's the only cause. It just means it's a major cause.
Yeah, right. The type 3 is inhaled Alzheimer's, I think he calls it. So yeah, that's a big connection. My mother just went through this last fall. And I think a lot of people who are in their homes more than they would have been with COVID, if they have a mold exposure, their symptoms accelerate because of being in the, you know, they were locked down, you know, we've been locked up. And so, she went through her journey, and we found one of my friends, you know, did a C4A. And then that was elevated. And then we did an ARMY, you know, she had mold. Oh yeah, I had a water leak in my closet and blah, blah, blah. So she came out, lived with us. We remediated her home. And, you know, she's new to my, she knows what I do, but not really. And I'm fine if she listens to this, but she's actually saying, you know, Christine, I really think it was the, you know, the toxic mold. I had mold toxicity, didn't I? Because she's completely back to normal and she's doing great. But it is, it really, her biggest symptom was insomnia and cognitive decline. And she's a smart woman. So, but she got her brain back and the mold got out of, you know, her body and out of her home. So, but yeah, Dr. Bredesen has done a lot for the looking at Alzheimer's from an environmental perspective.
When we look at general cognitive dysfunction, so the documentary I did on mold is called Moldy Movie. It's a gift for people. It's moldymovie.com. One of the guys in there is Dr. Daniel Amen, and he says, yeah, you can lose 15 IQ points when you're around mold. When you get rid of the mold, your IQ goes back up. Mm-hmm. And that is real. So if you're feeling like you're dumber than you were, that happened to me. I'm like, what is wrong? Like, I know I'm smart, but I can't think right now. I can't remember stuff. It's mold, and you get rid of the mold. And as long as you're eating enough of the right kinds of fat and you do the work, your brain can come back entirely, including my hippocampal volume is 87th percentile for my age range. Mm-hmm. Given all the stuff my hippocampus has gone through, it should be a lot smaller. It grows back. Mm-hmm. You just have to give it the presence of the right stuff, and you've got to remove the stuff that makes you weak.
Yeah. And I think you've mentioned, it's like not only, you know, this cognitive piece, but I just feel like, especially with, you know, the really epidemic of all these mental health conditions that we see, right? For good reason, there can be situational things and past trauma, of course, but anxiety, depression, insomnia, even obsessive compulsive disorder, all of these things, you know, we're getting there. We're shifting the paradigm to looking at these conditions of as neuroinflammation and looking at environmental causes like mold that we're really, I think, are still, you know, so many people are suffering that haven't put this connection together. So just made me want to plug that as well, because you said even like you had rage and anxiety and, you know, things like that. And yeah,
I I don't know how many millions of divorces happen because of toxic mold. Mm-hmm. And one of the big problems is that it hits different people differently. And maybe my favorite interview in Moldy, the movie, is a husband and wife couple. They're both medical doctors. And she was just disabled by toxic mold. And they're taught in medical school that if you have more than a few symptoms, it's probably all in your head. And she thought, well, I know I must be a hypochondriac because I have 20 symptoms, but my body temperature is 1 degree too high, so I know it's real. She biopsied every organ system in her body, which is really painful. And at the end of all of this, she's sitting there with her husband. They're both practicing doctors, full-on MDs. And he's saying, I never felt a thing. I know the symptoms are real because I saw them in my wife. We did all the medically appropriate stuff and we realized it was the house we were living in. We moved into a different house. The symptoms went away. She's not crazy. I don't feel it, but I know it's real. Mm-hmm. And anyone who's dealing with a spouse or a patient, someone who's like, it's not real. No, I have a dozen people, highly functional, normal people were just taken out like I was, who then came back, and a dozen doctors going, no, this is real. And people oftentimes have a hard time with that, especially, you know, if you're, it seems like it hits women a little bit more than men, but it affects different people differently. So if you're going, my wife just went crazy. We moved into this new house. It's perfectly nice. Yeah, there's a few stains on the ceiling. I feel fine. Like, well, yeah, you might get cancer next year or 5 years from now, or you might be getting a heart attack, but you feel fine, but maybe it's hitting her emotionally, or maybe it's vice versa. No, you need to get the stuff out of your environment. It is not safe for humans. And you send your kids to new school and they start going crazy. Maybe it's not teenage hormones. Schools are notoriously moldy because they don't have any maintenance dollars. And so this is a problem. One of the other things I'm going to mention, natural soil has fungus in it, but it doesn't go toxic like this because there's soil microbes present that fight the fungus. They create a balance. There is a company that I founded called Homebiotic, H-O-M-E, biotic.com. It's a probiotic you spray around a structure, and it creates that natural soil bacteria balance that balances mold so they don't get out of control. And I inoculate my home. I live in a very humid part of the world in the Pacific Northwest. I do just fine up here because I've been able to take control of that. So for me, prevention is really important.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you landed on that because I wanted to ask any of your hacks because, again, you know, mold is something that, you know, we don't live in a sterile world. And unfortunately, you know, we come in contact it more than we like. And I guess to that point too, Dave, I mean, is there a threshold that you feel like when you've been mold exposed that, you know, the ERMI people say like, you can't be in a house above 2 or you know, the Hertzme has to be less than, you know, 10. Is there a threshold piece that you feel like that a building or a work environment needs to be? And then we can do things like Homebiotic and air purifiers or so forth. But just, yeah, navigating like, okay, you figured out this problem, now how to like live in the world, you know, for people.
This is going to sound a little strange, but you'll never have a mold-free anything because one part per trillion, one part per quintillion, one part per, so free of, at a certain point you say, okay, this number means free of because it's as free as is reasonable. And if you're one of the most sensitive people on the planet, right, it's going to be cheaper to remediate you than it is to create a surface of the planet with no mold. Because guess what? We'd have no soil and no ecosystem without mold. It's part of the world, right? So what that means is we've got to spend the time and the dollars on fixing your immune system, fixing your neurological responses, fixing your detox pathways. There is not a consensus on what is a safe limit on a lot of these. All of the safe limits are based on economically convenient, especially in food. They don't care what's safe. They just care what's easy to do and they can sell. And this is why when you look at, say, coffee, there's no standards in the US, but there are standards. But if you look at wine, the standard here for ochratoxin A, which is both an environmental toxin and a food toxin, and one that's particularly bad for humans, it's the number one toxin in wine, beer, and coffee. So there's no standards in coffee, but our standard for wine is 10 parts per billion. In Europe, it's 2 parts per billion. Who's right? Well, I'm going to argue the Europeans are right. Right. But the Americans be like, I don't know, it was cheaper to make it this way. Right. And in China, I don't know the standard, but it's probably better than the American standard because our mold standards are particularly bad in the US. But we might have a much better pesticide standard than China would, for instance. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where who's right? Well, the lower you go, the better. But do you need to go to 0.00001? No, because most of these things have a dose response curve, but it's never set for optimal human performance. It's set for economic convenience. So your job is to do better than the government, which is a very low standard. I mean, seriously, do I have to tell you to do better than the government? Like, come on.
So wise. That's a loaded statement, right? I think my goal when I think about how helping people recover their health is to make them as resilient as possible, right? Because as you said, we're not going to be in a sterile environment. Our bodies, you know, are not sterile, but how do we, no matter what comes our way, that we can quickly recover, adapt, and, you know, lead healthy, meaningful lives, right? And so I think that's a really good point. And just kind of circling back, if people are at this point where they're, you know, still in this traumatized place from having so much, you know, suffering from mold, I think that's where like the limbic retraining and the neurofeedback and the trauma work and the, you know, we have DNRS or Gupta or, you know, whatever modality you do, like really honing in on that so that you can feel safe in the world.
There are amygdala retraining programs. All of my work has been around the 40 years of Zen, where we do something called the reset process. That's 40yearsofzen.com. And it's an intense 5-day, you know, program where we're feeding you mold-free, high-energy food. And it's a very carefully created program. For a lot of people, EMDR is the most affordable, eye movement dissociative response. And this is a way that can sometimes at least take you out of it. But if you walk into a moldy hotel room and you feel abject terror and like the end of the world's coming, well, I've lived that, right? You're like, I have to leave right now, right? And you get to the point where I can choose to stay, but you might regret it. So I was on one of those dinner cruise ships in San Diego a few years ago. San Diego is one of the moldiest cities in the world.
Yeah, I have a lot of sick patients in San Diego.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That and New Orleans are like big problems. But so I'm down there and I walk into this thing. Okay, usually cruise ships and boats have mold problems anyway, because they're always wet. This thing smelled like a wet mop. And I was like, immediately my nervous system's like, you should go outside. But it wasn't a panic response. It was just an awareness. And that's what you want to do. You want, oh, there's mold here. Okay, I'm going to go. But I'm going to go in peace. I'm not going to go in terror. And that's the weird stuff. It's hard to put words to it. But instead, I'm like, this is such an interesting dinner. And I'm meeting people I really don't spend time with. I'm going to take the hit. So I sat there, had dinner, right? And by the end of dinner, I was feeling a little bit woozy, blood flow, and my brain's changing. And the next morning I wake up. And I'm giving a talk, but I am super swollen. Like, I grow man boobs around mold because I don't know why. I used to have man boobs. I used to weigh 300 pounds. So I have these photos of me with some famous person, and I have like size A cups, right? And my face is all, you know, all you know, balloon man. And then the next day, my gut lining sheds, right? And I'm like, don't be in a room with me. This is bad. And this is a normal thing for mold people, right? And the day after that, the subterranean pimples come because I had deep inflammation at the low level of skin, not the little things, the things that take a week to come to the surface and are like boils, right? Yeah, that's all mold, right? And it was a programmed response, right? But the panic thing wasn't there at the beginning. It was an awareness. No, and you know, in retrospect, I shouldn't have taken the hit. I should have listened to myself. And I could have done a better job of binding the toxins, but I didn't have all the stuff with me because I was traveling on business. If I was at home, I'd have come home, I'd have done ozone, and I've done a couple other things, and it would have not been a problem. Mm-hmm. When I started my mold journey, if I was exposed, I was looking at 6 weeks of being a zombie. Literally 6 weeks till my brain would come back. And I can be exposed, and unless it's a really, really strong exposure, which might take me 2 or 3 days to be fully back, I'm usually back within 4 hours. Mm. Right. And this is from like stuff that really caused the systemic inflammation thing. And like, I'm not going to try and brag. I'm 48, but like, I'm in reasonably good shape for someone who doesn't exercise very much. And yes, I have like bio monitors and whatever else, but I exercise less than you, I promise. Right. And I probably eat more fat than you. Right. And I had mold poisoning for many, many years. So if I can recover to where I am now without a lot of work, without being hungry, without brain fog, and I can be exposed to mold on occasion and not die, I promise you I was probably sicker than you are. Like, it's hackable. It's doable. Your brain can work better than you thought. It's a real thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I love that, you know, statement of hope. And, you know, again, many people who are listening are in the throes of their journey. So, no, I think it's really important to hang on that recovery is possible. And again, how to navigate, you know, life, right? How do we become more and more resilient to whatever stressors come our way? So I could pick your brain for a little bit longer, Dave, but I think we should end on that. And I would love people to hear just what you're up to, anything that you want to share that you're passionate and excited about in this phase of your career.
So I'm well known for Bulletproof. We've disrupted Big Food. We've brought mold tested coffee and Bulletproof coffee and collagen and MCT oil and ketosis into the mainstream. What I'm working on now is called Upgrade Labs. And it's tied with what we know about mold. It's that recovery is the hardest part. It's easy to go to the gym and beat yourself up. But it's hard then to put muscle on afterwards. So most people who do exercise are over-exercising. And a lot of people are so stressed, they don't really need exercise. They need movement, but they need recovery. There's a set of technologies that have been used by NASA, by special forces, by pro athletes, and by people who know things that you've never heard of. I've been cultivating and curating those for 10 years. We've been doing it at the Beverly Hilton and in Santa Monica underneath Arnold Schwarzenegger's office for 6 years, and I'm franchising that. It's called Upgrade Labs, and there's going to be one in your town in the next year or two where you can come in, and even if you've had mold exposure, we have the technologies that give you your energy back and help you detox and recover faster than, well, you've ever expected. So that's a big thing for people. Even if you don't have mold, it matters. And if you've had mold, it matters even more.
Awesome. And we will have information on that in the notes alongside. And no, that's really exciting. A big part of what keeps me passionate is how to create more access to more and more of these tools for more people who are in this boat, right? So it will be really exciting to have your work in Upgrade Labs and more cities so people can recover more quickly. So I'm really excited to see where this goes for you.
It'll be good. All the mold people will figure out Upgrade Labs makes them feel better faster.
Hey, one city at a time, right?
Yep.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Dave, so much for your time and all the awesome anecdotes and the story of hope. And again, we'll have all the information in the show notes as well. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Christine. Have a great day. You too.